Anand's reading from message from Mother this morning. Let us take a deep breath and exhale. Let go of everything that's been bothering you this past week and feel the power, the light, the love of God enter your being. Relax in His arms of everlasting bliss and know that He is your Father and that He cares for you. And He will take care of you, every single thing that bothers you. That's a wonderful message. We can take that in and really incorporate it. Have that deep level of trust that God is taking care of us. Things happen in this life. Sometimes things we don't care for. Nevertheless, we are always sustained through it all. Particularly when we open ourselves to that light and that love and that feeling of power that comes from God, helps us to endure what must be endured, helps to uplift us and transcend those things that are difficult, and it brings that light to bear upon our problems. So oftentimes we think of grace, I want grace to come to me. I want to feel that power and that bliss and that love. And we petition God as if He's withholding that from us. The truth is, He is not withholding it from us. It is constantly flowing to us. It is we who have blocked that off. As we know from the great masters, there is a flow of life force that comes from behind us, in through the medulla, at the base of the skull, and then is distributed through the brain and down through the spine, and goes out through our physical system. Just a little bit of observation and we see when we are anxious, when we are afraid, when we feel alone and isolated, we actually close that opening off at the medulla. Not all the way, but it begins to shut down. And we rob ourselves of one of the greatest assets that we have for meeting and overcoming problems in this life and for feeling the joy of life. And for that, I'd like to read from the posting this morning, which also starts with a quote from a message from Mother. You can get these now, and you can sign up for it and accept it. And if for some reason it doesn't come to you, be sure to look in your files where spam comes into, because it is a group email, and sometimes your computer will read it like that. So you have to go in there and say that you accept it, that it's all right, it's safe. So Mother says here, you must not be afraid to face life. Life is exciting. It's terrifically exciting. And as each one of us came with a job to do for God, no matter how humble it is, it doesn't matter, because we can make each humble job great in God. Because the greatness is not in the job itself. It is the spirit in which it is done for Him. The spirit of service, the spirit of total renunciation of self, and the total uplifting and of giving yourself to the infinite Creator. I think that's a tremendous message. And I continue writing, Mother loved life here in the world because she has surrendered all to God, and as a result, she came to see the world as God. This rare universal vision makes us aware that the building blocks of creation itself are made up of God stuff. Electrons, protons, and neutrons, and all charged particles have come from the infinite storehouse, because something cannot come from nothing. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. So light itself came directly from God's creative factory, as did all else. When there is only God, and God is love, then how can you do anything but love all, even as God does? It is human nature to be attracted to that which is pleasurable and be repulsed by that which causes pain. So to appreciate that all is God, our experience must rise above the two forces of attraction and repulsion. In order to do that, we must experience a higher order of consciousness. It must rise to the level of God consciousness, in which all creation is seen as divine. Anything less leaves us in the dual realm and entails suffering. The suffering is different than body pain. It is suffering of consciousness because we feel separated from God. We try to arrange life so that pain is mitigated and pleasure is maximized. We can never remove suffering as long as we live according to the limits of the body. To know God, we must experience God. To know God, we must experience God. While this may seem a self-evident truth, it is amazing how many try to know God by reading books, through philosophical discussions, by doing good works, and through the reasoning mind. To experience God beyond an occasional moment of grace, we must meditate. And even then, it cannot be simply putting in your time. You must actively touch the fabric of that which is God. You experience His uplifting presence, peace, bliss, and wisdom. Through this touch, you are transformed until you are a fit instrument for unbroken divine consciousness. Now you live, breathe, and act according to active divine will. Your life is different, never to be the same again. Your life is not just your own in human sense, nor do you want it to be. You exist in continuous surrender, for that is your natural state. Victory is now yours through your surrender. The falsity of ego is but a past dream, and you love life because all of life is now seen as a process of evolution and becoming divine. Now your life itself is exciting because you are filled with bliss and wonder at all the works God does within and without. A bliss-filled devotee. Fred Kamens, an early disciple of Mother's, drove from his town just north of Portland up to Seattle every week. Fred had a humble job as a custodian of a church. His car was an older model, and it was somewhat a miracle that it made its weekly pilgrimage to Seattle with Fred at its blissful helm. Alone amongst all the disciples, Fred knelt at Mother's feet at the start of each meditation. I felt he did it for all of us. Is a custom that Mother neither encouraged or even allowed. When Fred pranamed with his face to the floor, he was suffused with light and bliss. In fact, whenever I saw Fred, he was filled with an inner glow of purity. I can only imagine that the church he cleaned was blessed because Fred was blessed. Years later, I was talking to Fred after service one time, and he told me that he'd slept in the bus station because his car had broken down and he couldn't afford to get it repaired. So he's coming up by the bus, sleeping all night in the bus station, then making his way out to the service in the morning. What tremendous devotion he had. And so I assured him I'd be very happy to come and pick him up at the bus station if I knew what time he arrived. So from then on I would pick him up and then he would stay the night in my house. He was just such a bliss-filled devotee, very simple in his thinking, very childlike in many ways. And yet he had this tremendous presence of God and devotion for Mother. It is tremendous to know him. Then I continue on here with health update. Recovery remains all good news for regaining the normal use of this body. From a real wheelchair, I graduated to a quad walking stick with a gait belt around my waist that Carla would hold as I walked. Safety first. That was something they emphasized through my rehab. Then I walked in the house without Carla spotting me while using the quad cane. Now I'm walking without any cane or assistance. What freedom! I am mindful of being safe, but as strength and endurance continues to build, I continue to broaden the activities I do. I've walked up our driveway and up the road a ways with Carla at my side. For my left arm, I'm using a small barbell to improve strength. So all of that is going along very well. All in all, I am happy with the progress. Seeing my surgeon this past week, Dr. S. said he is amazed at my progress. He really couldn't believe it. Dr. S. did have some news that was not so welcome. The results of my PET scan showed a dark spot on my spine at T7, that's thoracic 7, between my shoulder blades. He ordered a biopsy. I will let you know the results when it comes back. In receiving this news, I focus on what I can do today. So I send light and healing to the dark spot area. For today, I am fully engaged with getting this body strong and perfect working order. As God is the author of all of our beings and destinies, I leave it in His hands to see that it all should be unfold perfectly according to His will. I do all that I can to maintain perfect health while knowing that I am not this body, yet it is my part to be a good steward of it so that I may continue to serve God and Gurus in all that I do. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And on May 10th, we mark the anniversary of the birth of Sri Yukteswar. Reading from the Autobiography of a Yogi. Come, I will show you my hermitage. Master arose from his tiger mat. I glanced around me. My gaze fell with astonishment on a wall picture, garland with a spray of jasmine. Lahiri Mahashai. Yes, my divine guru, Sri Yukteswar's tone was reverently vibrant. Greater as he was as man and yogi than any other teacher whose life might came within range of my investigations. Silently I bowed before the familiar picture. Soul homage sped to the peerless master who, blessing my infancy, had guided my steps to this hour. Led by my guru, I strolled over the house and its grounds. Large, ancient, and well-built, the hermitage was surrounded by massive pillared courtyard. Outer walls were moss-covered. Pigeons fluttered over the gray, black gray roof. Unceremoniously shared the ashram headquarters. A rear garden was pleasant with jackfruit, mango, and plantain trees. Balustraded balconies of upper rooms in two-story building faced the courtyard at three sides. A spacious ground floor hall with high ceilings supported by colonnades was used. Master said, chiefly during annual festivals of Durga Puja, a narrow stairway led to Sri Yukteswar's sitting room, whose small balcony overlooked the street. The ashram was plainly furnished. Everything was simple, clean, and utilitarian. Several Western-style chairs and benches, tables, were in evidence. I remember when Larry and I went to Sri Yukteswar's home, that was his ashram, and had gone back to ownership of the family. And we understand that it was rare for anyone to get an invitation to come, but we were given that invitation. Typical of being in India, we were looking for the address. It's not so easy in India because they don't have quadrants laid out. So everything is by name and guessing how you get there. Even cab drivers don't know how to get to a certain address. So we stopped. And as usual in India, there's an instant crowd of a dozen or more Indians who all stopped, all there to help and to give directions. So I was watching Larry doing this. Indians were pointing in every direction as telling us which way we should go. So it was anyone's guess, but eventually we found it. And we both looked at these stairs going up to the upper balcony and thinking how many times Sri Yukteswar had used those stairs, how many times Master had gone up those stairs, and felt great reverence just walking up those stairs. They were stone steps, but they were grooved down in the center because they had been worn down with time. It was wonderful to be able to have that time there. And later, we walked down to the Ganges. It's not far from the Ganges. And so we walked down, and there was a large banyan tree right next to the river. And I thought, this must have been the banyan tree that Babaji was sitting under when Sri Yukteswar was coming back from his bath and gave him his darshan after he had written the book, The Holy Science. So these are very sacred places, and they're wonderful to be able to go to. So Sri Yukteswar is giving him this tour, and he invited me to stay overnight. A supper of vegetable curry was served by two young disciples who were receiving hermitage training. Guruji, please tell me something of your life. I was squatting on a straw mat near his tiger skin. The friendly stars were very close, it seemed, beyond the balcony. My family name was Priyanath Karar. I was born here in Sharampur, where father was a wealthy businessman. He left me this ancestral mansion, now my hermitage. My formal schooling was little. I found it slow and shallow. In early manhood, I undertook the responsibility of a householder and have one daughter, now married. My middle life was blessed with the guidance of Lahiri Maharshi. After my wife died, I joined the Swami order and received the new name, Sri Yukteswar Giri. It's interesting, Sri is oftentimes added to a name out of reverence, but it was given to Sri Yukteswar as part of his name. Such was his respect that he was given by the one who initiated him into the Giri branch. Such are my simple annals. Master smiled at my eager face. Like all biographical sketches, his word had given the outward facts without revealing the inner man. Guruji, I would like to hear some stories of your childhood. I will tell you a few, each with a moral. Sri Yukteswar's eyes twinkled with his warning. My mother once tried to frighten me with an appalling story of a ghost in a dark chamber. I went there immediately and expressed my disappointment at having missed the ghost. Mother never told me another horror tale. Moral, look fear in the face and it will cease to trouble you. Another early memory is my wish for an ugly dog belonging to a neighbor. I kept my household in turmoil for weeks to get that dog. My ears were deaf to offer a pet's more prepossessing appearance. Moral, attachment is blinding. It lands an imaginary halo of attractiveness to the object of desire. This is such an important lesson because it's absolutely true. You can get a certain obsession with something and you just think that nothing else will replace it. That's the only thing that will satisfy you, and it's perfect for you. And it destroys your reason and your intuition. So to be mindful of this, when you feel the pull of that kind of attraction, Master used to talk about being able to avoid attachments. He said one time that he was given coffee when he came to America. He had not drunk coffee when he was in India. And so he drank it occasionally, socially. Then there were times when he drank it on his own. And one time he was preparing it just for himself, by himself. And he realized he had a great desire for it. And he said, enough of this. And he stopped it right there. And he quit drinking coffee because he felt the pull on his mind. So we can practice that same thing. When we feel something pulling at us, and it's beyond reason, it's beyond anything that we can explain by the mind or by common sense, then we can stop it right there. If we stop it early, then we can control it. If we let it get a head of steam up, then it becomes very, very difficult to stop. So this is something to keep in mind. A third story, Sri Yukteswar continues, concerns the plasticity of a youthful mind. I heard my mother remark occasionally, a man who accepts a job under anyone is a slave. That impression became so indelibly fixed. Even after my marriage, I refused all positions. I met expenses by investing my family endowment in land. Moral, good, and positive suggestions should instruct the sensitive ears of children. Their early ideas long remain sharply etched. Master fell into a tranquil silence. Around midnight, he led me to a narrow cot. Sleep was sound and sweet the first night under my guru's roof. Sri Yukteswar chose the following morning to grant me his Kriya Yoga initiation, the technique I had already received from two disciples of Larhi Mahasaya, my father and my tutor, Swami Kapilananda. But in Master's presence, I felt transforming power. At his touch, a great light broke upon my being, like glory of countless suns blazing together. A flood of ineffable bliss, overwhelming my heart to the innermost core, continued during the following day. It was late in the afternoon before I could bring myself to leave the hermitage. So this was his first visit there to Sri Yukteswar. And we're so fortunate to have these personal stories from Master himself. It gives us a glimpse into his devotion, his desire for God, and his openness to receiving what is given. He had to surrender to get there. Sri Yukteswar wanted him to return back to school with books, something Master absolutely did not want to do. But he surrendered himself in doing it. He ended up going back to his parental home, something else that he was not looking forward to. So these things can happen when we meet our guru. Sometimes our ego can really take a tumbling. But it's all for the best, and it all is there to uplift us if we will accept it as such. Swami Satchidananda talked about how tough it was to be with Mataji. One time she is looking at the group that was around her, and she said, "Why don't you have God realization? You've been here for so many years and coming for so many years. What is wrong with you that you're not getting it?" And he felt very bad inside of himself. But when those kind of things happen, it can help to awaken an intense desire. You think to yourself, yes, why don't I have it? I have been coming here for years. Am I just treading water? And you could see it at some people, and it's not just about Anandashram. It's any place that you go. But people get into routines. They start to just settle in, and old habits start to come back in once again. One time Swamiji was asked, "Is it all right if we don't come to programs here, if we just stay in our room and practice Ram Nam there?" He said, "It's all right as long as you have intensity of Ram Nam. If you slip and you let it go, then you're not benefiting from it." Mataji, when she made everything at the ashram easy for devotees to come, and sometimes now people come, both Indians and Westerners, and it's just kind of an easy place to be. It's familiar to many who have been coming there since childhood, but they don't feel that spark of intensity. They don't feel themselves waking up. As I mentioned in the writing, when we meditate, we should not be satisfied until we touch the fabric of God's garment. Feel that peace, feel that upliftment, that light, that illumination in our mind, some great truth being revealed to us. Unless we have that, then we're not making the progress that we're destined to, that we should be doing. So we should keep ourselves accountable in our spiritual path. Sometimes we start out with the greatest enthusiasm, and it feels like all the doors open, and all we have to do is step through and we'll have everything. And then life intervenes. And it's not just life, it's how it interacts with our deepest part of ourselves. We have deep subconscious parts that will get triggered as we go about living our lives. This is one of the great things about being a householder yogi, is that we're not just simply trying to sit in a cave and think about God. That's not such an easy thing to do, by the way, because I sat in Papa's cave and was there to meditate. And I can tell you, when you go away into silence and solitude, the world follows you because you take it with you. It's in your mind. It's in your subconscious mind. So everything that is an obstacle, it all comes up to you. And sometimes you think how nice it would be just to get away from this world. And it's true, there are times when we are called to separate ourselves from this world and to have that time to go into deeper silence. But it should be a calling from God, not that we're just disgusted with the world or we feel that it's too much for us to try to balance the two worlds. I can tell you for myself that with the awakening of the Kundalini from my first year with Mother, then going back out into the world, it really is like living in two worlds. You have this internal world that is powerful, that is calling to you, that has its demands, and then you have the outer world that also has its demands. And sometimes the two are not always so compatible, that there were times when I just had to sit down where I was at. I remember I would take these trailers down to Sealand, down at the port, and bliss would just shoot up through my spine. And I just have to sit down on the ground and let it pass, because it would have been dangerous for me to drive the truck at that time. And so I just sit until it would pass. There were other times I pulled over to the side of the road and let it pass. And so as I went through my work life, I did my best to balance these two forces going at the same time. And as I say, it wasn't always easy, and I certainly didn't always do it perfectly, but I did the best that I could. And so when you're drawn inside and God calls to you, sometimes you can negotiate with Him. And I would say, God, you have given me this task to do in this life, and right now you're lifting me up in bliss, and it's making it so I can't do this task. Can we wait until this evening when I can give you my full attention? And then sometimes the bliss would come down, and I'd be able to go about doing my tasks. So sometimes you can negotiate with God like that. And He's given you both these worlds, and so He understands what a task it is to do both. But the thing is when you live in this world but not of the world, it helps you to gain balance. Then you can go anywhere and be anywhere, and you can maintain your connection with God. This is a tremendous thing to accomplish in this life. There's nothing more challenging, but we should not let that discourage us, because God's grace is always with us, and He will provide for you. I worked at a mental health center for so many years, and there were times when people would come back after having quit working there, and they'd come back for a visit, and they'd look at me with surprise, and they'd say, "Oh, are you still here?" And I think to myself, yes, am I still here? Is this where I belong? And the inner direction would be, yes, you stay here for now. And then one day, God took me on a totally different adventure. I was down at Prem and Sheila's house down in San Diego. They used to have a weekly bhajan there. And a lot of the Indians attended. A lot of the music was Indian. And I didn't know the words, and I would just sit and I meditated. And as I sat with my back against the wall in the back of the room, and suddenly God lifted me up and He said, "You should leave your profession now." And I was shocked at this. I had finally worked myself into what I thought was the perfect position. And I also had private practice going that I planned to expand. So that totally turned all of that upside down. And I didn't have any fear around it. I just had a question. I wonder how that will work. Where will I live? What will I use to live on? Again, it wasn't fearful things. It was just more of a question of what's going to happen here. And so I surrendered to God. And when I came back, I gave notice. And it took about 3 months to disentangle myself from all the different obligations that I had. So finally the day came, and when I did, then Peter had built me out a beautiful apartment out of a portion of his garage. He really did an outstanding job. And so I had a place to stay, and different aspirants were very supportive, and so I got along just fine, when before I didn't have any idea how any of that was going to happen. So you just step forward on the path when you feel it's God's direction. Now, it shouldn't be just any whim that comes to you. We should test every spirit. What does this mean? You go inside of yourself and you say, okay, God, I feel that this is your prompting. This is what you're asking me to do. I want confirmation for that. It can be inner confirmation or it can be outer confirmation. When I got the prompting that Carla and I should marry, I felt it, and it surprised me at the time. And so I wrote to Larry, and I asked him what he thought. And he thought it was a great idea. So I still wasn't satisfied. So I wrote to Swami Satchidananda, and he wrote back to me, and he said it also surprised him. But he felt that it was the right thing for me to do. Somehow I was still not satisfied. I felt Mother's prompting on it, that she was all right. And I realized it was Master. Master, of course, had been a monk all of his life, and he had held that out as a way to go. Even though they had householder yogis, it seemed like the preference was still for those who were monks. So I thought perhaps that I should stay with that. So I asked Master, and I meditated upon it. And finally he responded, and he told me that he wanted to have examples of householders who went all the way to God, and that this is what he willed for me, that he had a special mission coming to the West, and it required him to have that soul dedication towards the things of spirit, and that he wanted to have someone who had that householder yogi path clearly in mind. So then I felt all right and proceeded forward with that. And fortunately, Carla said yes when I asked. And the rest, you might say, is history. So you surrender to God, even when he takes you in directions that you don't expect. You may even feel like that's the last thing that I wanted. And yet, there it is. There's his direction. And one of the things is it keeps you alive. Keeps you alive to the moment. You can never guess where God's going to take you, how he's going to direct you, and what kind of things he's going to bring into your life that you will have to overcome. I never expected to have a stroke. I was not a good candidate for it because my heart is in such good condition. My blood pressure, cholesterol, everything is perfect. And of course, it was a stroke that was completely different from any of those things. And but there it came. And I thought, all right, this is the next thing that God is giving me. Now to recover perfect health. And so we had team total recovery, all praying and all working for total recovery of this body. And it's come a long, long ways from where I was at. So for that, I'm very, very grateful. And what God showed me one time is when he gives us obstacles, when he gives us difficulties, it's there to make us grow spiritually. Because as we take it on, and most importantly, as we dig deeper for God and God's power, God's intelligence, God's will, in order to meet and exceed whatever it is that he's given us, then we are growing spiritually because we're drawing more on God. We're perhaps overcoming our fear or our sense of limitations and going directly to God. We're not accepting just what we're being given. When I get things from the doctors, I get it as information, not definition. It doesn't define me. It's simply their education. It's their knowledge that they are giving to me. And then it's up to me what I'm going to do with it. And so there's this spot that's on my spine that they're saying is possibly melanoma. And I don't take that as definition. Even if it is, then it's just something that is to be met once again and overcome. And every time, as long as God wills it, that's the way that it will be. And I have a lot of work to do in this life, so I tell God, you know that I'm slow. You know that I'm not getting this done in a hurry. So you have to give me time to do it. So I'm not dragging my feet on purpose. It's just that he gives me a lot of things to deal with, both on the inside and on the outside. So this is the way that we live our lives. And it is exciting. You open your eyes in the morning and you think, what does God have for me this morning? We can get dull to that. We have a kind of sameness to life and we lose that vitality. We lose that excitement. Life should be exciting. It's not the kind of excitement that, oh, you're all a Twitter and you think you've won the lottery or something every day. But rather it's the openness to possibilities. What God has in store for you today. He is a creative genius. He has brought all of this universe into being. Do you think that he's just resting satisfied in you with doing nothing, with creating nothing? If we don't get it, it's because we need to dig deeper to get it and find out what that is. What is our service? And it can be simple, as Mother talked about. It can be humble. It doesn't have to be something that gets us in the news. Not something many of us want anyway, I don't think. So anyway, to tap into what is that purpose for me inside. And you may be going about some purposes that God has given you, but there may be something more. Every time when I meditate, when I close my eyes, I think to myself, God is infinite. That infinite potential is residing in me and all around me. And if I'm not awakening to that, that's on me, not on the outer circumstances. Because God is everything. God created me. God created this universe. Just think of the excitement the scientists have when they make a new discovery. You are a spiritual scientist, and you should bring that spirit of discovery with you into meditation every day. What does God have in mind for you? And it may not be spectacular in the sense that you get something so profound and so uplifting, but you touch the fabric of God, and that itself is exciting. You feel that peace. You feel that upliftment. You feel that transformative power in you. You don't even know always what God is doing with you. You feel that movement in your spine, and it's working. It's doing something. It's not just idle. And you feel that divine force flowing throughout your body. And it's also working. You feel it in your brain. And you feel the cells of your brain all lit up with a spiritual vibrancy. And God is awakening you. Sometimes you feel a pressure at your medulla, or you feel a pressure at your ajna. And that is God awakening in you. You feel an opening at the top of your head, and you feel God flowing out into the vast universe. That is God awakening you at the highest center. Or you feel your heart begin to open, and you feel that love flowing through you. You don't know always where that love is going to. You don't know the effect that it's having. As I've said before, when I was at Dwarahat, and I went up on that rooftop, and I felt these powerful vibrations going out from the mountains. And I knew there were meditating yogis up there. And they came like huge waves of energy passing by me, passing down through the valley, and going out to the world to help transform this world, to help lift it up. When you sit and you meditate deeply, and you feel that spiritual vibration, that spiritual power inside of you, you see that light within you, and let it expand out. Let it go out to your home. Let it go out to your community. Let it go out to the world itself. And feel that power is God's power. It's not yours. It's God's power. But it's operating through you. And you feel the world being lifted up. You feel it being transformed. We don't need to look very far to see sometimes that this world has turned into a Sodom and Gomorrah. There's a long ways for it to go to be in harmony with God's Spirit. People who are very worldly, they think, oh God, what a dull prospect that is. You're just confined. You're just given a whole list of things that you don't get to do. I don't want anything to do with that. And it's because they haven't awakened to the inner reality, to the bliss of God, the life of God, the intelligence of God, how tremendous that is, how vibrant that is, how exciting that is. So from today forward, let us open ourselves to that inner excitement, that inner attunement and upliftment in God. Let us not just sleepwalk through this life. That's a terrible waste of a life. And we'll get to the end of this life and we'll be lifted up from this body. We'll look back over this lifetime and we'll think how much I wasted, how much I could have had the opportunity to help change myself and this world. His mother said, this world is made up of individuals, and until the individuals change, this world will never change. You start with yourself, and sometimes you feel like you're swimming upstream against the current because this world is powerful and it has all of its sights set on materialism and on sex energy and on money energy, and all the weight goes in that direction. And people who lead a spiritual life are seen with cynicism and sarcasm. And so one day when these individuals wake up to the spiritual life, they'll feel very sorry for the things that they did and said towards those who were sincerely leading a spiritual life. I know that because I've had that in my own past, my own experience. There was a time when I was in high school when I was never positive enough to say that God didn't exist, but I felt that I had absolutely no idea whether he did or not. And my tendency was to think he didn't because I was just taught the orthodox ways of God, and I didn't think that was probably God really living a life that I thought he should live. And I remember I was talking to a girl at the time in my class, and it's a time of what were known as Jesus freaks, and they are filled with devotion for Jesus, and she was speaking from that point of view, and her face was just lit up, her eyes were lit up, and I could intellectually easily crush her statements that she was making, but what I couldn't crush was that light that was in her face and her eyes. That stuck with me. I thought, that's something real. I can't go along with the philosophy, but I certainly see where there's something that's real going on there for her. And so I set the philosophy aside, but that light in her eyes and that face, that stayed with me, and even now it's closed my eyes, and I think back on that, I can see that. And so that was God's gift to me. That was God's grace to me. It penetrated in through my own ignorance, through my own lack of knowing, and it awakened something in me. And it didn't change me permanently because I wasn't ready for that. But it was a moment of awakening for me. So to turn our eyes towards God, every day you look, okay, God, what's in store for us today? What's exciting? What do you have in mind for me? And to open yourself up to the vast potential that lies inside of you. There's a field of potential within and all around you that oftentimes we're just simply blind to it. And to open yourself to it without any demands of what that should look like. You're just simply game. All right, let's get started today. Let me open myself up to that exciting world that exists inside of me, the exciting world of God. Mother certainly had that. She didn't lead a dull life. She also didn't lead an easy life. So if there's a part of us who thinks that's just easy street, we're here to work. We're here to do our part. And this is something to remember. When things come at you, it's not a mistake of life. It's something untoward has happened. It's God that is also working with you so that you might work with the world, perfect yourself, and to help perfect this world. That is an exciting prospect from beginning to end. So just know that you are in my thoughts and you are in my prayers, and that I wish for you that kind of exciting life. That God should fulfill you in every single way. My loving pronouns to you. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. God bless you.